Bookers, come on down. You have stumbled upon our midweek author interviews, where we dive into the weird and creative minds of the writing community. At the controls are indie authors Zintra Sullivan, Kay Banning Kellum, and David Atherton Cooper. They still don't know what they're doing, but it's a gold star for effort. Welcome to What the Book Podcast, where scripts and pants are optional.
Hi, bookers. How are you? This is our season two interview time. Of course, our format slightly changed for season two. We have our author interviews being midweek. How exciting. We get more time to talk to our authors, more time to find out their nitty gritty and dive into their closet full of skeletons. Now, our guest today, of course, has a lot of skeletons. But first, before I start off, way to go, our new intro. I love it from Ancient Dude, at Ancient Dude. Go check him out. Jordan is fantastic. And, of course, my co-host, David Atherton Cooper, is here today. Hi, David.
It's so good to be back.
It is, isn't it? I love this. I love our podcast. And season two, who would have thunk it? Ah, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our author today, David, you're going to have to play referee with this one, I do believe. So saddle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Don't know what you're talking about. Do not know what you're talking
our
about.
Today,
clips in the saddle. Okay, we're good.
Our author today is Margaret McKayser. Now, Margaret and I have a very long history together.
Not a good one.
And if anybody asks anybody, I don't like her.
We are not friends.
We never have been, never will be.
Hashtags. Frenemies number one.
I have the number one chart topper for you, Frenemies number one. I do have the hashtag for it and everything. So David may have to pull in a little rank.
So I'm going to have my work cut out for me today. Okay.
Pretty much.
No, I'm nice. It's her that you have to worry about.
I'll get the big cat herding net, shall I?
Right. The big paddle, I think. All right. So let's get started with this one. As I said, Margaret and I know each other personally. I do believe I've probably humped her leg once or twice, probably with Kaya, you know, where it's how we roll when we're at signings is what we do.
Twice? Keep going.
As the actress said to the bishop.
Yep.
Yes.
For my listeners, Margaret has one of the most, I don't like her, love her book. Let's just get this straight out there. Love her book, don't like her. And I really want to dive into the way that she does her books for the listeners, because I think it's something that a lot of authors struggle with. So let's start off with what do you think? What is the first thing that you wrote that you felt good about, that you felt was of a standard that you would want to publish?
Okay, so when I first started writing, I had no idea whatsoever about anything that had to do with the author world. When I say no idea, I quite literally mean no idea. I wrote my very first book in less than 2 weeks, and it shows that I wrote it in 2 weeks, because the story is phenomenal. I love, 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 love the story, and it's so out there. But the writing's atrocious. I tell anyone, try not to hold that against me when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
the very first thing that I wrote that I loved, that I felt could get out there, was my first book. Looking back, no, it wasn't. And it shouldn't have been. It shouldn't have been. I should pull it off retail, and I should rewrite it and put it back. But I love the story, and my brain doesn't work like that. My brain works with that book is done, move on to the next.
Right.
So even though I want to rewrite it, and even though I just love the story so much, my brain won't let me rewrite it.
Oh, but surely if you found a suitable anniversary, you could do a director's cut republish.
I could.
Don't pull the old one. Just put the new one out there as the new and improved. And this is what you guys should have been reading when you got it.
Nah, I'd pull the old one off. It really is atrocious. The writing is terrible. I'm not one of these people who says it just, you know, oh, it's so terrible, but honestly, it's fantastic. Nah. The storyline is what's fantastic. The storytelling? Yeah, nah. Don't go.
We've all got to practice our craft over time.
Yeah, don't we? And that was a real practice one. The problem with me is that I thought I had a great editor, and the editor that I had wasn't as good as the one that I have now, who she is just phenomenal. So when I wrote that book, I thought I was doing the right thing, but I ended up not only not doing the right thing, it wasn't the wrong thing, but it wasn't the right thing for me at that time.
Right. So tell me, with this powerful story, where do you find your inspirations? Where do these ideas come from?
Well, anywhere really. There's nothing in particular that I like. I might be walking somewhere and I'll think, oh, how good would it be if I had a story about X?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, oh, X, but what if? And it's always the what ifs that get me. So I recently watched something on TV, and I don't want to say what it is because it will actually give a spoiler away for my last book that I wrote. And I recently watched something on TV, and I was so moved by the story that I started thinking, but what if? But what if this happened? And then, of course, the what if becomes a character, and then that character becomes so loud that it doesn't matter what I want to write. If I don't write what this character is telling me to write, then forget it. I'm not going to get any words on paper at all. So that's where I find my inspirations. It's always in the I'm looking at something and then I'm thinking, but what if? Right.
So when Margaret will phone me and go, hey, I've got a book idea. And I go, is it Frills and Lace? And she's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, always. Yeah, always. Yeah, I'm real fluffy.
Now, Margaret writes books that are cheap. And, I mean, David, I'm going off topic here, off our question, so I'm sorry. But Margaret writes books that are typically she does class them as YA, but we'll go upper YA, I certainly wouldn't be encouraging my 12, 13-year-old to possibly dive there, although there are some very advanced 12 and 13-year-old readers out there. And some of the subject matters that she deals with are very much relevant to, 12 and above, unfortunately.
But they're edgy YA. But they're edgy YA.
They're edgy, they're realistic, and at the sound of, trying not to sound egotistical here, they're also quite prolific.
They are. So Margaret deals with there's been abuse, there's been eating disorders, there's been mental health issues.
No eating disorders. Oh,
wasn't
yet.
There one that was? No, but there, I'm sure maybe. There was.
No, so, not yet.
There might be.
Who knows? Because, you know, I like light and fluffy subjects. I say with sarcasm.
I don't know how many times I've just sat there and gone, oh, of course, we're going to go really dark. Excellent.
Yeah. So I like dealing with real life subjects that people are faced with every day but are either too ashamed or too scared to talk about. So things like... Right. Mental health. Mental health is a big one, and I'm a very big advocate for mental health. And if you read any of my books, you'll find that there is mental health in pretty much every single one of them. And I talk about getting mental health help without that stigma in surrounding it. I talk about things like domestic violence and conditioning in domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I don't shy away from the subjects. I refuse to. I don't gloss over them. I don't make them seem like they're awesome. Like, who would want to be in a domestic violence situation? Nobody would want to be.
No, so you don't glorify it.
No, I don't. I don't glorify it, but I also don't shy. I refuse to shy away from it. I want to show the reader, and I want to show the reader what my character is showing me, which is the worst of the worst, but also the best of the best.
And so does that come from a place of hope? The story shows that it is possible to come through this and move forward, or is it literally just shining a light and saying this stuff happens?
Both. But really, what my biggest aim, my absolute biggest aim, is bridging that gap between the person going through this to somebody who they can trust to tell about their story. Because I'm finding a lot of people are just not talking about these things. They're not talking about it. They don't want to talk about it. They can't talk about
it. Yeah, they don't know how.
They can't. That's right. And if you can pick up my book and read it and then find somebody to say, okay, I know this might have been exaggerated, or I know this might not be exactly my story, but this is happening to me, then that means that that communication has been opened. And once it's opened, then that's the first step to getting.
Well, I know I've read many of your reviews, and I know you've had comments from your readers, which are an amazing amount of them. You're very popular within the writing community. They've done exactly that. They've read it and felt it was them, or they've read it and felt it was somebody that they knew and helped them bridge questions, or helped them bridge a communication level that brought about an understanding and perhaps a beginning of help for the person involved. Because it's not even just the person involved, it's the person who's watching it who can feel helpless to know what to do as well.
Yes.
So while your stories are fictional, they hold a lot of reality to a lot of people.
Yes. I always say that my stories are completely fictional, but they're somebody's reality.
Now with that, David and I and Caleb, of course, which podcast was it, David, that we were dealing with research? And I did mention Margaret, and this is where this damn thing came about, that she thinks that I like it, which I don't. So, whatever.
No, I know you love it. Me, not like me. Love me. I have it. I've recorded it. I can play it. Would you like me to play it back
for everybody to hear? Caleb, we're talking about if you're going to go into a subject matter that you don't. Yeah,
that you isn't you, isn't your personal experience.
That research is what needs to be done in order to, what's the word that I'm looking for, David? In order to validate the story?
Yes. And to give it authenticity and make it not just some naff pastiche to give it some credibility.
Characters. Some characters can be stereotyped, and that's great, but there's ways to do it and ways not to do it. And the research that goes behind certain topics has to be thorough. So what I wanted to ask you was how, when you're dealing, now I know you, and a lot of the subjects that you write about aren't necessarily things that you've lived or have people that have lived through, but you write about them. So how do you research? What's your techniques in order to find out the information that you need to relate to the characters so that the reader goes, yes, I get it?
So I've written all different books. I've written, as I was saying before, domestic violence. I've written drink spiking, date rape. I've written mental health. I've even written death, cancer, death.
That's a killer.
And
classic children's birthday entertainment.
Oh, so yeah. So,
I
so I've even written books about a cult, and when these characters come to me, it's always the character. Well, no, it's not always the characters that come first. It's usually the what if that comes first, and the characters are so close behind. It's almost like the characters are giving me little subliminal messages saying to me, "I want you to write this book," and then they're there. They're, as soon as I start thinking the what if, they're there. But the research that I do, once the story, the what if is in my head, that's when the research starts. And I, what I try to do is I watch as much as I possibly can. I read as much as I possibly can. And I interview as much as I possibly can to try to honor these people's story. Because like I said, it is reality. It's fictional for me, but it is somebody's reality. So I want to honor them. I want to pay tribute to them. I want them to have a voice. So I will spend many, many hours, days, weeks, possibly mm-hmm. even months trying to research what I need in order to honor these people's lives. For me, I will download and I will read whatever book I can. I will watch whatever YouTube video I can. I will go online and try to involve myself in the communities of what I am writing about. But again, I'm not a very vocal in the communities. I watch. Mm. They're very voyeuristic. What I watch, and I watch the interactions, I watch the words that are used, the phrases that are used, and I try to incorporate that without copywriting anybody, obviously. I try to incorporate the way that they are through my characters onto my page for my words.
So you're getting the authenticity almost kind of through immersion as far as you can.
Yes, as much as I possibly can. But I'm pretty empathetic as well, and I can put myself in somebody's position. Mm. I do have an ability to look at things from a bird's eye point of view. So although I might not agree with something, I still am able to see both sides of the coin. I'm not blinded by one particular thing. So although it's difficult to write, I still have to be authentic.
Yes. Well, look, this might go on a slightly different tangent, but picking up on, you know, so you read, you watch, you check out YouTube. Do you have, when you're actually writing,
mm-hmm.
do you have, or what sort of rituals or habits do you have?
Absolutely none.
Okay.
Absolutely. What I do is, well, the one thing I do need is quiet. I don't like noise. So I will usually write when everyone's asleep or everyone's out of the house. I don't like people around and I don't like noise. So I can't have noise going. It's very rare that I have to have a song playing, but if mm-hmm. I do, it's a song that the character is really engaged with. So if the character wants me to listen to a song over and over and over again, I will, although usually it's just quiet.
Right. Yeah, Zintra has to go hide in the car at the moment.
I am in the car. I told Margaret that before. Everybody comes in the car.
Wait, baby, are you in the back seat or the front seat? No,
I think it varies with the topic for the week.
Can't put the seat down at the front.
So you find you're most creative then at night time when everybody's out to it?
Well, I find my most creative when the character decides to come in my head, which is usually when I will say this, usually in the shower.
Or
in the
yes.
in the bathroom.
I do.
Yeah, I'll be minding my own business doing what I'm doing, and then the character will go, hey, I've got something to tell you. And I'm like, really?
That?
Really?
Legs up
now?
On the side of the shower trying to shave my leg and suddenly somebody's talking. You're like, what the fuck? Can I not?
Yeah. I did. I actually had one book, and that's my domestic violence book called Ugly. That one happened to me when I was sleeping. So I had a dream, and it was a dream of a girl, and she was sitting in a bathtub, and it was just tinged with a little bit of red, and it was like a dirty kind of bathtub. It wasn't filthy, but you could see that it hadn't been cleaned for a little bit. And she had her blonde hair, and it was wet, and she was huddled in the bathtub with her knees up and her arms around her knees, and she was shaking and crying, and she looked at me. And she said, help me. And I woke up and went, what just happened? And right that moment, the name Lily popped into my head. And from there, that was how Ugly was conceived and how I started with Ugly. And I knew she had a story. And once she was a little bit shy to come forward to me when she started, when we started. But once she opened up, she just blossomed and told me her whole life story, and I couldn't help but write it down. I had to. I had no choice. She wouldn't leave me until I wrote it. And then once I wrote it, she said,
thank you. So you and I write very similar in the fact that we don't, we've talked about this on the podcast before, where I don't actually make up characters. They come to me. As I've said many a times, it's like I'm sitting at a bar. I mean, it could be in the shower or the toilet or the car or whatever, but it's that feeling of just me, and somebody just comes up to me and introduces himself and says, here's my story. I need you to write it. And I go,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's up to us to interpret all the stupid things that they do and all the bad things that they do, or the bad things that happen to them, or the good things to happen to them. And I will tell you that I have had characters not talk to me because I wanted story to go one way and they wanted it to go another.
I've had the same where they just shut up and you're like, really? Is that what we're doing? It's like toddler school. We're playing no speaks.
they went quiet. Yeah, I had one character who went quiet because he didn't quite like what I was doing. So he went quiet, refused to talk to me, and then I went, fine, I'll delete what I've written and I'll keep going from there. And then he started talking to me. Yeah, and I'm like, really? Really? Now?
David,
really?
You're not just the most needed person you know now. You know Margaret as well.
I'm truly in awe of the strangeness that goes on in your head, ladies. That's quite amazing.
Well, now I've just, you know what I've learnt now? Now I've learnt that if somebody punches a wall, I've got to write that they've punched the damn wall, because if I don't, they're going to keep punching it and God knows what's going to happen to their hand. So, you know what? I'll just write that they punch a stupid wall.
I have given many a time to a character and just gone, okay. And at the time I've thought, you're just fucking up the story because this isn't the way it should be done. And yet, when you look back at the story, you think, okay, fine, you knew what you were doing, whatever. You know?
Yeah, if you write the scene the way it appears in your head, whether it's a flash of inspiration or whether it's a big, long video that's playing, whatever it is, if you write it that way, even if it feels weird, even I kind of come back later on and go, oh, hang on.
Mm. Look, that sort of works. Yeah. I've given myself over to the fact that I'm now just a conduit for these people who talk to me, and you can't see these people, but I bloody well can. So I might as well just write their story, because if I don't, they're either going to get louder or they're going to get stubborn. Yeah. One of the two. So I might as well just do what you want me to, fine, but I don't like this part, I'm changing it. No, I am doing this. And then we argue and then we kind of come to a negotiation and then we're fine and we keep going.
Many times I've said this, I even though typically my name's on the front cover as being the author, I'm more of a scribe. I do what I'm told to do by the people talking to me. There's no other way.
Yes.
Yep. So you hear the voices and you write them down. Oh, yes. That's interesting.
The way it's always worked. they come up and they go, hey, this is my story. Do it my way. Okay. Sure.
I have to. I think because my characters are so trauma driven that if I don't give them tell you their story, then their trauma means nothing. So I need to make sure that if they're showing me that they're punching a wall, they're punching that wall for a reason. Why? Let's delve into the why, but I have to show that they've punched that wall because they've come from such, they might not have come from a horrific background. They might have, and that's one of the things with virtually all my stories, is that their upbringing is just like you and me and everybody else. There's, you know, a lot of, it's not trauma driven from bad upbringing. It's trauma driven from an event, usually from an event that happens. So I like showing that one of my favorite books is called Addiction, and it's about a girl who develops ice addiction, and her family are loving and they're very supportive, and there's been no, you know, sexual abuse, there's been no physical abuse, there's been no mental abuse. It was getting involved with the wrong guy. That was all that it was. But
so one trigger event, that's but everything exactly flows
right.
from it.
Yes, that's exactly right. And not all my books are like that, but most of them are. These are things that can happen in the best of families, in the worst of families. It does not discriminate. And I know that discriminate.
Book connected a lot of mums and daughters with their understanding of the, especially the mum's point of view going, but I did it all right. I thought I did it all right. What the hell have I done wrong as a mum? You know, and I know that there was a lot of praise for you from that. Now, of course, listeners, Margaret Makeza is, and she will kick my ass if I don't mention this, at two times.
Hashtag.
Caleb with his little clapper thing on. A two times New York best selling, New York Times best.
Oh, you got it wrong. You got it wrong.
New York Times.
Listen, it's wrong. Shut up and listen, right? It's New York Times bestseller times two. Thank you very much.
We stand corrected.
God damn it.
I tell you, I have not stood in front of the mirror and said that 100 million times. No, I have not.
Tell me, what two books? Tell the listeners.
Okay. All right. So the first book that made the New York – so the New York Times, the category that I made New York Times for with was the young adult section, which – incidentally, they have now deleted. And the reason why they've deleted it is because five indie authors made that list, of which I made it twice. So the first book is Ugly, which is my domestic violence and conditioning book. Conditioned to hate yourself, conditioned to think that you are less than, basically. And the second book that made the New York Times is Mistrust, which is about drink spiking and date rape, and all happens. And I'm not saying more because it's a good book.
Because there's when you pick up one of Margaret's books, you know you'll just saddle in, strap in, ride the roller coaster because the blows keep coming right to the very last page, and you will never pick it the way it comes. So I thoroughly implore all listeners to go grab a Margaret Makeza book. And Echoes of You is the newest one.
Okay, that's my newest one. And I will say, I don't say this often. I did say earlier Addiction was one of my favourites, but Echoes of You is my favourite. I suffered an awful hangover with that, and I'm still struggling with it.
It's an amazing book, one that certainly left an imprint on my readers, that I don't think I've ever read a book like it, and I don't know if I'll ever read another book quite the same. It's phenomenal, and Echoes of You by Margaret Makeza, please, bookers, just go pick it up. It is phenomenal. David, go pick it up and read it. You'll love it.
I love
that. I shall indeed. But before I do, Margaret.
Yes.
So Ms. New York Times bestselling.
Hashtag times two. That's right. Thank you.
Yes. We're getting it right.
That's right. Okay, this is
what the book. We aim to get it right.
And you may now address me as only hashtag New York Times times I'll two. Thank you very much.
So, lady, I'm going to take you right back.
Okay.
Let's go back to the beginning, where we started.
Okay.
What advice would you give to yourself if you could go back to when you wrote that first story?
I would say to me, if I came from the future and looked at myself first, I'd make sure I didn't have any grey hair, which I'm sporting right now. Second.
Oh, darling, I know.
Second, I would say, oh, my God, no, don't wear that. Definitely. And third, I would say.
Yep, with you so far.
Yep. And third, I would say, take time, put it aside, read it, send it to a good editor. Go find the editor that you're working with in the future. She's fantastic. And she will tell you. That's what I would say.
So how do you find a good editor?
Well, my editor actually found me. So I wrote a book and it's called Yes Master. It was banned by Amazon for who knows what reason. They refused to tell me, as per normal Amazon ways, you know, hey, Your book is banned. Fix it, and you can put it back on. Okay, what am I fixing? I know we can't tell you. So that's normal Amazon behavior. Anyway, she downloaded it and read it and messaged me and said to me, "I love this book, but your writing's not the best." And I was like, "Yeah, whatever, lady." And then she said, "Look, can I send you the first chapter edited and you can have a look at it?" And at that time I was writing another book, again, another trauma-driven book called A Life Less Broken. And I said, "Yeah, sure, do that." But in being an author, you have so many people who will message you and say, "Your editing's crap, your proofreading's crap, your cover's crap, I can do better, I can do better, I can do better," and you learn to ignore them. Or you just say, "Yeah, thank you very much," and just leave it at that. Anyway, she sent me the first chapter. It was edited and I just didn't have a chance to have a look at it. And she messaged me, I don't know, a month, a few weeks, I have no idea, later, and said to me, "Have you had a chance to have a look?" And I said, "No, I haven't, but I'll have a look right now." And I went and had a look and I saw what she did and I went, "Oh, shit, yeah, she's good. Oh, shit, I'm really bad. Oh, no, this is not good at all. Oh, geez, she's really good." And from there we've had a relationship. That's how I found my editor. And I just adore her. She works with me. We have a really great relationship and she works with me really. We just work tight, you know, and she'll come to me and she'll say to me, "This is not needed." And I'll say, "Well, I think it is because of this. So I want to leave it." She'll go, "Okay." And then there'll be other times that she'll say, "This is crap. Get rid of it." And I'll go, "Okay, no worries." So we work really well together and she can tell me whatever she wants and I don't get offended. I'm very good with criticism. As long as it's constructive, I was just about to say.
Yeah.
But if you're going
to. If it comes from a good place and it's absolutely there to help and support, absolutely, rather than just tear apart.
But if you're going to come to me and say, and I have had this, "Oh, your book is really shitty edited, I can do a better job." And I'll say, "Okay, can you show me where?" And then I get nothing in response. I go, "Yeah, right, okay, no worries." So basically you wanted to negotiate a price that I would come to you but not show me anything. Okay, yeah, thanks. You know, or people who just want to attack with absolutely no construction, then I go, whatever, and just move on. We've talked about very thick skin
before on podcasts, that where advice can come from, whether it can be from something that somebody constructively wants to help you with or somebody actually wants to tear you down because you threaten them or you make them feel uncomfortable. Now, talking about editors, though,
can I just add? Sorry, let me just interrupt you there, Miss Front Seat, not even back seat. You're not even in the back seat for me. You're in the front, and that's rude. Right? Can I just say, I'm also incredibly brutal. So if somebody asks me for their advice, I will give them my advice. I do not sugarcoat it. I refuse to. I will say to you, "I do not like that, and these are my reasons why," or "I love that, and these are my reasons why." So I appreciate people being like that with me, but I want it, be brutal with me. I have no problems. Just don't give me, "I don't like that." All right.
Yeah, explain the reason. Why? Show the working. Yes. And then it's constructive. Yes. It's supportive and it makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I don't get offended. I don't get offended if somebody who's been giving me 5 stars gives me a 3-star and says it wasn't my best work. Okay, I understand. Tell me why it wasn't my best work because of XYZ. All right, cool. Will you read my next book?
Now,
yeah, awesome.
I've been on the end happy days. Of here's Margaret's a link. Mentality a few times.
Well, look, if you ladies need a hobby, that's all good. No need to share it with everyone.
My critique partner, even though I don't like her, but I know.
I have the recording.
Go, you know, XYZ's happening. Blah 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 blah. And she'll go, "Okay, but have you thought of this?" And you go, "Huh? or no, that really sounds like shit, Sintra. You really just need to stop it. Ah, okay. So I trust Margaret explicitly. I don't like it, but I trust her explicitly with advice to do with my writing. I wouldn't go to anybody else for brutality quite so thorough as what Margaret delivers me sometimes. I love her for advice.
See? No. There was a pause. There was an obvious 3 seconds pause. I love her.
Z, you stopped to draw breath.
That's right.
It's a mistake.
So, that's it. Nat, there was a full stop. I heard the I love her full stop. That's what I heard.
See, you've got to pretend you're playing the disc. Circular breathing. You can't stop. You can't leave a break. There's no way.
I'm in.
I told you from the beginning, you had to come and defend me.
Nah, defend my ass. He's sitting there eating popcorn. What are you talking about?
You defend your own ass, lady. However, so what if, let's think back a little.
Okay.
What if, random question. What if? So you have a character appears to you.
Yes.
Who is troubled, mm-hmm. a little strange, probably a little quiet. Mm-hmm. But we mentioned eating disorders earlier on, mm-hmm. and something out of the ordinary. So maybe what if they're stuck in a room where they have a window and they can leave seed on the window and they can catch the birds that fly past, and that's their eating disorder. How would you handle that?
Well, hopefully they've got a barbecue. They can catch the bird and they can cook it.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Literally.
Let's be civilized. Okay. It's not Quest for Fire. They have cooking facilities. Where does that go?
Oh, God. I don't know. I haven't got one of those characters in my head, but I don't know. I think I'm chewing on my nail here, trying to.
Well, it's hard though because I think like Margaret's like me in the fact that. Unless the character presents itself, it's hard. I mean, and the boys jump me all the time with this shit on the podcast because I sit there and I go, I don't know unless I have somebody talking to me. Yeah. I've got no one here. I'm not the creative person. They are the voices. I'm just a scribe. That's the way I feel when I'm writing. And I know Margaret does a very similar thing. So what are we feeding? What we're using seed to catch a bird. Was that the premise?
Yeah, that'll do. And look, I appreciate this is coming completely out of left field and it's someone else's inspiration, not yours. So I'm just interested in how you take that or if you, because
I think my character wouldn't be sitting there to catch the bird. I think my character would be sitting there envious of the bird. Has the wings to fly away. Mm-hmm.
So they're trapped, they're caught in wherever they are?
Interesting. I think we lost a little bit of you then. I don't know if the listeners will hear that. It came through very broken to me. I'm not sure if that will be on the recording, but it's just. Well, honestly,
yeah,
listeners,
I lost a bit of the sound there.
Really, really here seeing me. No, not so much her. So that's all right. Is she still there? Have we still got Margaret on board? Or have we lost her?
I think, sadly, we may have to call her back.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Hang on a minute, bookers.
Do you want to end this bit of the recording and then we'll put it to a second one and stitch them back together?
Just invite her back in. All right. So Margaret's books is something that, okay, I pressed the send button, so we'll try and get her back in here. Margaret's books for the listeners are very topical to subject matters that our teenage
we're back. I don't know what happened. It just disconnected.
Aha. I'm just saying there you are. Hello.
Books are very topical to issues that our young adults, and I mean, right up until, I mean, honestly, domestic abuse, that affects every age group. So they're very topical to taboo subjects that people are living with but not necessarily talking about. And the beauty of your books are that you can read them, connect with them, and somehow use them to bridge communication levels with those around you and possibly find ways out that you hadn't thought of.
At any age.
At any age, exactly. So that's something that I admire very highly of your books.
Not me. I noticed you. Yeah, I noticed that was of your books, not of you.
I did not pause, woman. I did not breathe. All right, so let's end. We're going to have to pull this. I could talk to you for hours.
I could talk for hours too, so, I think. Whatever. But I was thinking about my bird question now. Thanks.
Oh, fine. Go answer the bloody bird.
I
want
to. I honestly think that my character would be sitting there envious of the bird, envious that the bird can freely do what the bird wants without knowing of anything that goes on in life. So what I mean by that is that that bird can just flap its wings and go, and then that bird can sit on the ledge freely and eat some bird seed and leave. And
So
your character,
one thing I do like writing about is really strong female characters. And one of the things, if anyone has read any of my books, is they'll see that the cast is a strong female cast. The psychologists are usually female. The mother is usually quite strong. You know, I have a strong secondary characters are quite usually the female characters, as well as the main character is strong. I want to show strength. Strength is...
You do write very matriarchal.
Yeah, I want to show that we as women can be what we want at any time that we want. Age is not a factor.
I love it. I love it. I do. I admire the voice that you give your books that speak to the people. I do. I always have.
Thank you. See? You did love me.
I don't like you.
You moved.
No, you, I don't. Anyway.
You moved to the back seat, didn't you?
I didn't move to the back seat. I'm still in the damn front seat.
She just walks into these things, doesn't she? It's
David,
it's quite delightful and entertaining. But,
nah, you don't need to film. You can do it yourself.
I feel like I dig a hole every time I hop on this podcast, and I just go and sit in it with my glass and body.
Right.
Now we're going to have a fun question. A fun question. Now this is one that Margaret did want to have, and I've been tossing up whether David and I should even ask it because she seems a little
I'm excited. And if you've changed it, that's it. Suddenly that stop recording button looks pretty good.
Yeah, we did have two.
See, one thing I've learned is never interrupt an excited woman. Just go with the flow.
For you, I love it. Now, David did have another question that was fun as well. So we'll do David first.
I don't know.
You were going to ask. It was on your bloody, you sent it to me about her favourite confectionery.
Okay.
Yeah, go.
I'm listening.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I haven't had enough coffee this morning.
Me.
So, Margaret, tell us what is your favorite
chocolate?
What's your favorite?
You know what the problem with that is?
Really?
I can't have sugar. So for me, my favorite chocolate would be anything that ends with Cadbury, of course. Oh, you know what? I'm a fan of everything. Well, I'm a fan of if it goes in my mouth, I love it. Chocolate.
Yeah,
I added that part because I know someone was going to say something revolting then. Go on.
David, I can't stop that question.
No, we don't do evolving. We do suggestive, obviously. We lay traps in the conversation. If you need that oral gratification, you go for it, lady. Really don't hold back. So, okay, if you can't have sugar, what's your favourite treat?
She likes balls.
Really? Well,
lots of balls.
Yeah. I'm not a taco lover, so we're all good there. I like my eggplants, though.
You like your protein balls for your snack. Mm-hmm. You like eggplants. Cheers.
Yes,
that's what I would know as aubergine.
Trust you to bring everything back to dirty. Here I am trying to keep it all nice and clean and respectable, and yet no.
We didn't describe them as purple appendages. We didn't mention
what are
the
you
mouth
talking about? Oh my god, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I know you too well. All right, so the question that Margaret wanted us to ask.
I love it.
God.
Come on, hurry up and ask us.
For the bookers, we've done this a few times for authors, which it's gone down very well, is our island question. If you were on a deserted island, what three things would you take? Now, of course, they have to be able to fit in a suitcase, not like Kaya says, I'll bring my entire family, I'll bring an entire house, and, you know, I'll bring a grocery store. No, cannot fit in your suitcase or it cannot come.
Really?
So it has to fit in your suitcase. So if you have pre-planned something that doesn't fit in your suitcase, girl, you have to.
Well, geez, I'm so shocked by this question. I wasn't expecting it. Well, first thing I would bring is a satellite phone. That fits in a suitcase. Second thing I would bring would be the lamp from Aladdin. And the third thing I would bring is Hermione's bag from Harry Potter. So there you go. They all fit in the suitcase. Yeah, actually, they all fit in Hermione's bag.
Right. Trust you to find
it. I've been thinking about this for so long. I've been like, yes, I know what I'd take. Because I recently just watched Harry Potter with Olivia, my youngest. And, you know, Hermione's bag. Hello. I'm bringing that, that's for sure. Because I'm putting everything in there.
All right. David, what are you bringing to the island?
What am I bringing to the island? Well, I'm going to cheat a little. I'm going to have a very strangely shaped suitcase because I need to bring my wolf's tooth stuff so that I can train while I'm on the island and keep fit and defend myself. And I'm thinking there's probably going to have to be a solar-powered laptop. Because
I've got chicken scratch. Do you have chicken scratch, Ryan? So my Ryan's terrible.
Something that I can write on. It's like a spider that's had a really bad night on the tequilas and wandered through an inkwell. It's some of it's quite creative, but oh man, even I can't read it sometimes. So no, it has to be typed. Has to be typed. And I think probably the last thing I am going to bring to the island is going to be. Please excuse the reference.
Because you're white.
Because I am whiter than the driven snow. I have the English complexion, darling. If I'm on a desert island, I am.
That's funny.
Lord. Sunblock that I can.
All right, I'm bringing.
What are you bringing?
This is coming out of the freezer, island. Lady. We're good.
Vodka, a dildo, and an umbrella. There you go.
Really?
Let's just get drunk. Yeah, look, you know, I'm on an island. I'm probably going to die anyway. I might as well be drunk and get a big O in there.
But what?
The umbrellas for sun protection. And, of course, as CPEL did mention previously on her guest when she came over that I would have a sand in my crack issue. No, I have magic sand. It stays out of my crack. It's all good. It's my fictional life. I will have it the way I want it to have it. I have Teflon pooch. Leave me be. All right? So umbrella, vodka, dildo. Trust me, I'm having my own
a recipe.
Well, you do that.
It's all good. It's all good. Okay, so Margaret McKayser, where can our bookers find you? Tell me where they can find
they
you.
Can, where can they find me? They can find all my books are on, except for Yes Master, that Amazon deleted, of course. And yes. You can find me on Amazon. A few of my books are in Kindle Unlimited, like Echoes of You, go get it now. I'm also on iBooks, Nook, Barnes & Noble. I think that's it.
Yep. They can find you on
Can
Twitter.
They find me there?
No, I am.
I'm not very active there because I don't understand it. I'm not very tech savvy at all. When I say not tech savvy, I mean, what difficulty did we have trying to get this app going?
True. It took me like 24 hours to get Margaret on this damn thing. So, you know, she's not the brightest.
Not when it comes
spark,
to tech
trust.
Stuff. Now,
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook or Instagram. I don't know what my handle is on Instagram, so good luck finding me.
But if they put in Margaret McKayser, Margaret McKayser, McHeyzer, mm-hmm. McKayser, if they put that in on the Instagram mm-hmm. search engine or, of course, Facebook search engine, you have an author page and a personal page. CA automatically stalk her author page, try to get on her personal page. find her, stalk her, buy her books. Echoes of You, the newest one out, is one that is a must read.
My favorite, my absolute favorite.
You all read it. Now, of course, David Aston and Cooper, where are they finding you?
I lurk around
Kung Fu Panda
at Kung Fu Panda.
I said Kung Fu Panda. I thought Ponda. That was cute.
Ponda, P-O-N. I ponder a lot, and
damn it!
Pixar
how dare they?
The rights on Kung Fu Panda, so they beat me to it.
And David, it's all good. You can win it either way. Of course, bookies, you can find me wherever. I'm everywhere. Google my name, just hunt me down, stalk me, find me, talk to me. What the Book Podcast, of course, at What the Book Podcast on Twitter. We have a YouTube channel. We have Discord. Find us. We want to talk to you. This is a podcast for you, the indie authors, run by us, the indie authors, and we are really trying to make your day. So thank you, Margaret McKayser, for joining us this week. We really appreciate your
thank
time.
You for having me.
And
you love me.
We will talk
you do
soon.
I have the recording.
David, I'll see you back on the podcast on Sunday, babe. No!
I think we'll leave this troublemaker to enjoy her Saturday morning. But then there has to be a rematch.
All right.
This has been great fun. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.